Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, sponsor of the annual customer seminars. This virtual or in-person program will provide tools for the demands and challenges of managing a farm business in today's environment, along with updates on the latest federal and private crop insurance products and new program ECO, Enhanced Coverage Option.
This is the January 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. And Sherman Newland is here from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's begin by getting a list of things that we should take up for the day. Dave, what topics do you have in mind?
Hey, Todd, and good afternoon. And, you know, I think the topic here continues to be demand in our markets. I think there's two things we should, you know, we can point out today. One is that we've had volatility kind of return to the market. When I say volatility, that means volatility in both directions. Last week was a good example. We were down $1.05 in beans. Really the first serious correction that we've had here kind of along the way, and we've seen a two-sided week so far this week since that time period, and you know, I think that's more of what we're going to have to live with going forward. The demand story, I think, to bottom line that, it really is a situation where we see these U.S. balance sheets continuing to get tighter here. We've had very active export markets this week. China's been a very active player in both the corn and the soybean markets. We continue to see a lack of evidence of any rationing, particularly in the soybean side of the equation, where the sales pace that we combine between the crush rate we're looking at and the export rate we're looking at quickly takes us to a zero balance sheet, and we just simply can't afford to do that or won't see that happen. So at some point here, we have to see something give, and we have to see price get to a point where it rations that demand, and we're looking for evidence of that. The Chinese margins that we see on the import side continue to look very healthy. The domestic demand continues to look very healthy, and somewhere along the way, we're going to have to balance these two situations out.
Chip Nellinger, any topics to add to this list? And if not, I'd like to hear your thoughts on rationing.
Yeah, well, I think Dave hit the nail on the head. Volatility is going to be here. You look back at the past history. Every time we've been up at these levels, you've seen a great increase in volatility. So, you know, the old saying, the easy ride's over. It's not going to be straight up anymore like it has been. To me, that's a good thing. It's going to give us opportunities. I would agree. I don't think we've seen the rationing. Obviously, you know, this week we've sold 100 and some million bushels of corn to China this week at $5 plus. We're not rationing it as of yet. I think to a certain extent that's inelastic demand, right? Typically, the old supply and demand, textbooks in school and college tell you the higher prices go, it slows demand down, but I'm not so sure that this Chinese demand is going to be like that. There's a lot of mouths to feed. They're rebuilding their hog herd. They're not going to let their citizens and people go hungry. And they're going to buy this, I think, at any cost and at any price. So that's a little bit of a different twist to this thing. And it may not be responsive to price. And I think some of it goes back to in retrospect, I think we'll look and say, well, yes, we had a trade deal with China, but I think more importantly, they were going to buy this no matter what. It just happened at the time with the trade deal. I think their crop was a lot worse than what they let on. And so I think that's the twist in here. And it's hard. You know, I was talking to somebody earlier, if it's a weather deal, at least you get a forecast, even if it's inaccurate. The problem with this Chinese demand is this the start? They're going to buy 50 to 100 million bushels of corn a week for the next 3 months? Or is that the last we're going to see them in the corn market for 6 months or a year? That's impossible to forecast, but I don't think you've likely seen the end of it. And it's a little bit scary if you think about that because of the massive increase they're trying to ramp their hog herd up, the massive number of mouths they have to feed over there. It's really a unique once in a lifetime type of a demand, and I don't think we've rationed it yet.
It's a planned economy playing in a free market, Sherman Newland. He alluded to the other side of that, which is the possibility that they decide to simply halt and for whatever reason, not use corn to feed hogs, to develop a meat supply for their population. I suppose that this does create some serious issues as it relates to marketing for producers.
Oh, it does. Chip nailed it on the head. We don't know when they're going to stop or if they're going to continue to buy this corn market the way they've been buying it. So it does raise a lot of risk for producers. There's always the risk. I mean, I agree with everything they both said as far as demand, the way things are looking. It looks like they're going to keep coming after this market. But, you know, what if one day here for too long they start canceling some sales? I mean, that's always a possibility, whether it's, corn or beans, either one. We'll have to, watch out for those type of things. I mean, demand has been good. I mean, our export sales this morning for old crop beans was not all that stellar, and our meal sale was not all that stellar today either. And we haven't really had a lot of, flash sales for beans that we've seen in corn here this week, with 147 million bushel of corn bought this week by China. So it is going to be, a daily market that you're going to have to pay attention to, and producers are going to have to, set targets out there for some sales. I mean, just like today, we made new highs, hit 550 in corn, but it sure wasn't there very long. I mean, so if you're wanting to make some old crop sales, you're going to have your orders in ahead of time, to take advantage of some of these prices as they come, because the market is getting very volatile. And, we'll have to see. I think it'll be interesting tomorrow, to see what the COT report shows. I mean, it's been showing record, managed fund length in corn, but the managed fund length in beans have been kind of waning. And to me, that's a little bit concerning. I would like to see that number start to tick back up. To feel really confident that they're going to continue to come after this bean market. And, I do agree upside potential in beans is still there, I think. But maybe we sit back for a little bit and maybe we don't see that big, strong leg higher in beans until, the processors start trying to find beans later on and there's none to be had.
Dave Chatterton, USDA will have to deal with China and the potential it has to continue to purchase, as it always does, on the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates reports. Those are due out on the 9th day of February this coming month. Not very far away now. How do you expect them to handle it?
Yeah, Todd, it's going to be a tough job for them. I mean, we've seen them go about a process since last summer of changing their view on stocks and the production of the crop and kind of where they've been the last couple of years. That's gotten them in a very tough situation, particularly with the soybean balance sheet, where ending stocks are projected as of last month at only 140 million bushels. We generally consider pipeline, I guess, minimal operational, levels in the U.S. at around 95 million bushels. So we've got a very small, kind of room for error in this balance sheet. And in the meantime, when you look at where USDA is at, let's say, our crush numbers right now are about 6.5% above where they were at this point a year ago. The USDA says we're going to be up about 1.5% on the year. When you look at our exports, we've already sold 95% of our full year export projection with 7+ months left in the marketing year. And really, we sold 66 million bushels last week. As Sherman indicated, that dropped off this week to only around 17. But on average, we've sold about 40 million a week, and we have about 125 million between where we were as far as export sales on this week's report and where the USDA full-year estimate is. So I don't see a way that they cannot walk those numbers higher based on where we're at today. It would take a pretty good collapse in the second half of the year and a ton of cancellations, just things that we don't see happening on that. The corn balance sheet has a little bit more room, and ethanol is certainly a slow spot. Ethanol, year-to-date, we're looking at about 8% behind where we would normally be. The USDA says we're going to be up 2% year on year. So there's a little room there, but the export situation in corn is also very vibrant. China's bought, as we talked about earlier, it's about 140 million bushels just this week alone and is changing that situation. So, I don't see a situation where they can't get a little bit tighter here, Todd. How aggressive they are, we'll have to see. Keep in mind, too, that we'll get our first look at their new crop balance sheets when they come out with the Outlook conference on the 18th and 19th of February, just a couple of weeks behind the crop report.
Chip, I want to come back to you on something you mentioned up front. The Chinese were in the market this week for 100 million of corn. At $5 plus, that's an extraordinary number. And the market still, it only took it in stride, but not much better than that, I suppose. What do you think of it?
Well, I think that a lot of that, there's a lot going on just besides the Chinese demand. So, you know, yes, the market knows the Chinese demand is there and likely to continue, at least for the foreseeable future. But I think there's a lot of other factors going on here as well. The outside markets, we've seen some fluctuations there, some big swings in the stock market this week, so a pretty big move higher in the dollar on Wednesday. So I think there's some outside, money movement, money flows going on. I think there's some hedge funds that maybe have some bad positions in some financial markets and the stock market that are maybe taking some profits in, on the grain. So I think there's a lot at work in these markets beyond just what, one would expect to be a wildly bullish week of exports in the corn. And it's really kind of adding to some of that volatility that what we were, what we were talking about earlier. And yeah, I think my point with that is also that this volatility can, while it's gut-wrenching, can be good, right? Because if the market does have this break that happens for no good reason, and we have some higher sales made, it allows you to come in with some calls to cover those. The volatility can be good and allow you to position into the market in a way that you're right no matter what happens, but you got to have a plan to do that and then execute it when you get the chance, given that market volatility.
Sherman, I want you to talk about the weather, both in North America and South America. So in North America, it may be snow on wheat or just rainfall and a change in the western areas, maybe in the Midwest where we're starting to get some snow, we're getting a little precipitation, maybe there is premium. And I don't know whether this is truly the case or not coming out of the new crop marketplace or that could. And in South America, the weather has been better maybe than people had thought. And it looks like the crop harvest is going to be bigger than people maybe had thought mid-season, at least for Brazil. What are your perceptions there?
We'll start with here in the U.S. It's they're definitely dry. You've seen the drought monitor maps up in Iowa and Nebraska and both the Dakotas up and through there. And, yes, they're supposed to be getting some snow, but that really doesn't help a whole lot. So going forward, that's going to be good as far as getting crop planted, maybe on a timely manner, and may not end up with a whole lot of prevent plant acres. But at the same time, they're going to want their soils replenished, as going forward for the growing season. Sometimes that's kind of tough up in those areas for that to take place. So it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. In South America, I don't disagree. I think Brazil's going to have a pretty darn good crop of beans going forward. Right now they've been getting a little bit too much rain, delaying some harvest, maybe affecting some of the quality of the beans that are ready to harvest, right now. And it's going to also set back a little bit later on their second planting of Safrina corn. But I think the trade was already kind of expecting that because a lot of the crop was already planted late. But going forward, I think the forecast from what I've read a few times, outlook for Brazil, it could be on the dry side actually for their second crop corn. So that'll be interesting to see. As far as Argentina goes, there's been quite a bit of rain falling in certain areas, actually a little bit too much again in some spots, but Argentina still has a long way to go. Some of their crop just got finished getting planted. So it'll be, time will tell on that. And I think those are the areas, the Safrina corn crop and Argentina corn crop, maybe this corn market's also trying to take a look at down the road. If this demand picks up, maybe South America won't have as many bushels to contribute back into the world supply.
How far along is the U.S. corn farmer in making his sales for the 2021 growing season?
It varies. I think a lot of sales have been made. A lot of sales were made early. A lot of sales were made off the combine for corn. And, I think that at the time it seemed like a good idea. But looking at the markets now, they've missed out on quite a nice opportunity for this run up. And if they didn't re-own it, that's going to be painful because it's, meant a lot of money to average size producer, between the corn market and the bean market that, they probably didn't take advantage of unless they came back in and re-owned it with some calls. But percentage-wise, I think a lot of corn has been sold, not near as much, though, on the percentage side as beans. I think a lot of guys have sold out quite a few beans.
Thanks for the reminder about selling beans early. Did you? Me, yeah. However, it was a good sale at the time, and I still think it was a good sale. I leaned in, and that was fine. I don't have any problem with that. So, however, I do have this question. So, that which is left in the bin, a producer's not charged with trying to make up the losses that they feel like they didn't catch the first time around. So what I'm trying to say is hanging on too long and waiting for a much higher price in order to make up for lower priced sales earlier in the season may or may not be the right thing to do, Sherman. What do you tell producers when they call in?
Right. No, I mean, with this market action, I think if you still have beans left, I think you need to be making some catch-up sales. I don't know if we can make new highs over that 14, whatever we got, 236 area, but on up days, I think you need to, clean up some of your old crop sales. If you want to keep some gambling stocks in the bin that you're not paying storage on, I think later on down the road, like I said earlier, I think basis could really improve for old crop beans. Once these end users and crushers find out that, there's just not a lot of beans out there to be had. But I wouldn't hold everything, until that point in time. I'd continue to make some sales on these up days.
Yeah, and I'm mostly interested in all three of your opinions on what they should be doing with the old crop corn that they have stored in the bin. And maybe there's something different as it relates to being in elevator grain storage as well. Sherman, I'll come back to you on that. But Dave, if you could pick up for me, please.
Yeah, Todd. I mean, certainly you have to look at corn at these types of prices. I mean, and continue your marketing here. For old crop that you still have in the bin or that you have unmarketed here, there's really not a lot of substantial carry in this market to take advantage of. And I think you need to be looking for a place to be making some sales. So in general, we're still friendly to the market, but, the markets do what markets do. We could have a macro market meltdown. We could have some issues here. So in general, our thesis here is that this is where we lean on futures and options. And when we're making cash sales, we're typically coming back in and replacing at least part of that ownership with options. And typically it's a low risk strategy like a call spread. We may be doing a 40 or 50 or 60 cent window up in corn and paying a fixed fee up front. And in doing so, we have no loss for risk on the downside. We have, a fixed amount that we can gain on the upside. If the market goes through that first 40 or 50 or 60 cents, hey, we'll lean on it again and perhaps re-up that. But give yourself some flexibility. Don't be fooled or lulled into sleep to think, lulled into the situation of thinking that, hey, prices can never go down. I think we got a good reminder of that last week. In general, I want to play more offense here than defense, which is what we've been forced to do in the last several years. But stick to your marketing plan. Look at your profitability numbers. These are very frothy levels compared to where we've been. And certainly it's a situation where you should keep your marketing moving forward here in corn.
Chip, your marketing plan for old crop corn as it stands today?
Yeah, I mean, I largely agree with Dave, right, to his point about basis and carry. There's no carry in the market. Basis is historically very, very strong. It does reward the market and do, use the volatility in the down days to position yourself with, some calls or some sort of strategy that gives you some upside with limited downside risk. I think if you get much past mid-February, late February, you're just into gambling, and that's okay. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. You may well, pick correctly and call the right roulette number, and we end up at $6. But you get much past this February time frame, and you really betting on spring weather, or you're, saying to yourself, I'm going to hold this stuff into July, August, and see what kind of summer weather we have. And, I guess in my opinion, there's easier, less stressful ways to do that, because right now the market's telling you, and has been for a while, through basis and the lack of carry and the inverses in the market, that you want your grain right now. So why not reward it and have some ownership on paper if you want to, quote unquote, gamble out into summer on the weather?
On the flip side, when you look at the spread between old and new crop, you probably don't feel nearly as compelled to make old crop or new crop sales of corn, but should you?
Well, we have been advising people to get up to 20% both on corn and beans, Todd, and wait for the volatility. If you see a price break, might have to be patient. If you see a price break, re-own that, add some calls to that, and play it that way. So we've got plenty of upside potential into summer, because if we do have the one in 80 year type situation where South American droughts followed up with a drought here, things can get really crazy this summer. But you have to look at profitability. We'd be 20%, but probably holding into early spring and summer on making many more decisions at this point.
Yeah, I agree with Chip on that. I mean, that's what we're telling our guys. I mean, you look at corn, you know, at 438, we've banged up against 450 here a few times, got above it a little bit, but now it seems to be pretty stiff resistance. I'm in total agreement. I think if you want to make some sales to get something on the books, 10-20%, I was kind of looking maybe as we get into that March 31st, planning intentions report, if we're above 450, between 450 and 480 or $5, I would probably push that level a little bit higher, 30% or so. But I'm definitely coming back in. We're telling our guys to come in with call spreads, kind of like what Dave was talking about. I think that's an absolutely great idea for corn. And same way with beans. I'm not so fast on contracting new crop beans yet. I'd like to see if we can get over $12. I mean, if you want to do a little here, that's fine, in the mid $11 range. But I think new crop beans still have quite a bit of work to do to the upside. And the potential for them to go higher is, definitely good this year, with the carryout that we're looking at. But as far as corn goes, I'm making sales. But, when you're looking at the stocks to use ratio we have, 10.6, there's, hadn't been a whole lot of years. We've been tighter than that, maybe 5 or 6, 7 years. And in all those years, we've had corn at this level or higher. Going forward, I'd like to be a little bit cautious on new crop sales, but re-own what I do sell with call options.
Dave, anything to add?
Not much to add. I mean, I think these guys are hitting it on the head here. I mean, I think the theme here is that, for me, I'm going to be pretty patient here. We're at about that 20% level, corn and soybeans both. If your own farm profitability model tells you that you need to sell more than that because of, it's too frothy, that's fine. Make sure you own some calls or call spreads against that so that you can participate in the upside. This is one of those situations where it could be a pretty explosive summer. If we have a weather problem in the U.S. this spring or summer that threatens our crop, it could be pretty explosive. I think corn, we've still got a window here of some time, not only because of the import situation. If I look at the margins in China, they've got a $13 corn price. That's a $6 difference to where U.S. Gulf corn is offered. It's a very high import margin. I think there's a big risk around that South American corn crop simply due to the fact that it's going to be planted late and gets into a very dry, potentially dry pollination window going forward. So we're, like I said, in the position of trying to play a little bit more offense than defense, being a little bit more patient with those sales before we reward the market additionally. I think we've got a little bit of time here, Todd.
Sherman, a demand-led marketplace. Can we talk about demand and its functions here? So ethanol in a good position going forward?
It's not as bad as we feared it might be. I mean, China came in and bought 200 million gallons of ethanol here this past week. So that's a good sign. I think with the vaccine that's coming around, everybody's hoping that we're going to get more driving going on this coming summer. So I think going forward, we can look for the ethanol demand to maybe pick up and the grind to pick up a little bit. So I think that's going to be good as well. I mean, demand side from the feed usage, I think that's going to be strong. I just feel like we're not going to be able to cut those numbers anytime soon for corn feed. So and then of course we go with along with these exports that we've been looking at. So the demand side is going to be, I think, hard to deny right now.
You agree with that assessment, Chip?
I do. I do think that, in the big picture, ethanol is likely the first place we're going to start rationing the demand. It's the easiest to ration. And I guess then, in my opinion, followed by export demand. And finally, the feed usage here domestically would probably be the last place that we would do that, or the hardest, just simply because, it's of the burden of, how do you liquidate animals? That's not an overnight process. That takes time. And I think ethanol, I agree with Sherm. I mean, it's for $5 corn, it's functioning a lot better than what I had anticipated. But maybe some of it is this inelastic demand that, I talked about from China. I mean, they just may be determined to buy that market, buy our products, irregardless of price. And that's a weird economic fundamental to throw into our markets.
It is an odd one. And they were determined, although I think they were helped tremendously by the onset of ASF, not to buy products from the United States under the Trump administration once tariffs had been put on to some of their incoming products. So it does make for some unique political functions over time, I suppose. I don't know, Dave Chatterton, whether you have anything to add to this demand side conversation or if you want to go on to a final thought for the day.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, not a lot to add other than it's a very different situation. I think in China, regardless of politics and trade deals and whatever, unfortunately, we have to talk a lot about China because they're the kind of 800-pound gorilla of demand when it comes to global grain trade. And when you look at what's happened, they've been selling their corn reserves to the tune of 50 million metric tons a year over the last several years on average. That's 2 billion bushels a year they're putting into their domestic market. Those reserves are now depleted, and that demand has to be made up for in some combination of corn or other feed grains, or I guess suppose higher production. And I think all that takes a while to balance out, and that creates a demand that Chip used the word inelastic. I'll just use it as, hey, you know, trade deal or no trade deal, even with, you know, prices where they're at, $13 in China, $5 in the U.S., hog margins in China still very positive, crush margins in China still very positive for beans. The import margins on corn are good, and I think that demand is there, and that's a different specter for the market than what we've been dealing with. I think there's another side to this, too, of the situation that we find ourselves in here. It's been a very dramatic change from the picture the USDA painted last summer to where we're at today. At one point last summer, they were telling us our corn carryout for this year would be $3.3 billion. They're now at $1.6. They were $600 plus on beans. We're now less than a third of that at $140 million. And so the combination of this kind of jump and surge in demand is also hitting at a time when the USDA, and I'll say it in maybe the softest way I can, but it appears that they've gone about a process of capitulating, that they overestimated production in the previous years and have cut their stocks accordingly to kind of balance things out. And it leaves us in a very precarious position, particularly for soybeans on the balance sheet going forward. So, you know, some unprecedented times here, and I think the trade deal is still out there, but I'm not sure it's a big part of the calculus of what's going on here just in terms of supply and demand.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. I'll start with you today.
Yeah, I would, I guess, say two things. Be ready for really choppy markets, volatile markets that unless you have a plan, it's really going to cause a lot of heartburn. You know, with that being said, I think you still have to focus on, you know, profitability and know what your numbers are and lock that in and use that volatility to position with some sort of a lower cost option strategy like we've been talking about earlier to have some upside. Also, I think really important here, we're about to start into February and averaging the spring price for crop insurance. And that is an extremely important decision to be made and part of the of a person's, you know, individual marketing plan. We're coming into the highest levels likely we've seen in several years. In some cases, you know, there's some different buy-up type policies out there, ECO and SCO, that might work for individual operations that may get us, based on individuals' cost of production, right at or even slightly above profitability. So that becomes a very important part of a marketing plan, and we're about to get into that, you know, spring crop insurance averaging situation here next week, and that's very, very important.
Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois, your final word?
Yeah, I mean, we're being offered some tremendously good prices for old crop. I think guys really need to take advantage of that, you know, get some sales made on the books. And then, you know, be cognizant, you know, start thinking about your new crop. Absolutely. November beans, I think, has a job to do yet. I don't know if we're going to actually get as many acres bought yet that we're needing. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out down the road. I think, you know, corn acres could be pretty big this coming spring, and bean acres could come up on the short side. So I think, you know, beans have some upside potential. But, you know, if we get good weather, you know, this summer and we end up with 93 plus million acres of corn, this corn price could go south, you know, later on as we get down the road. But, I mean, that's all to come. You know, it's not going to do it right away. I agree. You know, I think we need to buy call options on dips, you know, but, you know, use those call options to make some forward sales in the these corn, new crop corn, especially.
And Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, Todd, I think it's important to just, you know, maybe adjust your mentality here a little bit and recognize that the market has transitioned or is transitioning away from a period in the last, let's say, 4 to 5 years. Marketing years of a situation with high supply, high stocks, high ending stocks to use ratios, and generally some pressure on prices to where we are today. And we find ourselves in a situation where those stocks have come down, the demand is cranked up, and we're getting in some levels here that allow us, like I said, to play a little bit of offense and think a little bit more strategically going forward about where we can be from a profitability standpoint and how to take advantage of that. So know your numbers and your profitability and what current prices mean to that. Chip hit on a very good point for crop insurance. You know, we're getting into this period here. That's kind of the base of where you start the rest of your year when we talk about new crop and where we go versus that February average. Some of those 95% guarantee products that we've looked at, you're talking upwards of $900 an acre on corn. Very profitable levels for a lot of these producers if they're going to take those products. And it allows you to market in a little bit of a different way. None of that means to fall asleep at the switch here. You have to be disciplined in your marketing. We know we've had a firsthand experience in the last 6 months of how far this market can swing and how quickly it can do it. You know, you've had a $6 plus move here in beans since last summer. And if you think the other side of that shoe can't drop, you know, you're fooling yourself. We know that this market can be volatile and do that. So, you know, prepare yourself mentally for that type of a situation and look at your marketing just a little bit differently, but be disciplined about it going forward.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can hear the whole of our program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. We'd like to thank our panelists for the day, including Chip Nellinger, Dave Chatterton, and Sherman Newland. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.